Hello, writing marathoners, writing sprinters, writing pole vaulters, and writing hurdlers. I'm Grant Faulkner, and I have no idea why I decided to go with the track and field metaphors today. But writing does require all types of speed, endurance, and leaping abilities, so they seem appropriate. A writer even has to throw the occasional shot put. I'm here with my fellow distance runner, at least on the page, Brooke Warner. And today we're fortunate to have two guests who probably know as much about writing as anyone, I think. And I say that because they've both edited one of the best writing magazines out there, Poets and Writers. So they've published articles on just about every writing topic under the sun. And just in case you don't know about Poets and Writers, it's a literary nonprofit and it's an award-winning magazine as well that provides all sorts of resources from writing prompts and tips on technique to informative interviews with published authors and literary agents and editors and much more. And Brooke, you know, speaking of go-to writing sources, do you have a magazine or a website that's a longtime favorite?
Well, Poets and Writers is right up there for sure. I especially love their profiles, and they do some pretty amazing deep dive stories and features. So it's a writer's magazine, absolutely. And I read a lot of publishing stuff. I'm a fan of Publishers Weekly and Jane Friedman's The Hot Sheet, which is an online newsletter. And we're really lucky to be in an industry that's so dedicated to words, because there are a lot of great magazines and websites to read and follow. So I want to give a shout out to Forward Magazine, because they're such an awesome champion of indie authors, and also to Shelf Awareness, which I read weekly. So there's more than I can read, frankly, but I do read a lot. And another point I'll make here is that these magazines and sites are driven by book people, and that's kind of an industry insidery term to reference people who know their shit around books. And so if you're a book person, you know and love books, and you dedicate your life to books. And today's guests, Kevin Larimer and Mary Gannon, are total book people. So we're lucky to have them.
Yeah, we are. I just finished reading their amazing book, which just came out recently. It's called The Poets and Writers Complete Guide to Being a Writer. And it really is exactly what it claims to be. It's the complete guide to being a writer, a book I wish I had when I was just starting out, when I was 20, or even when I was 30, or when I was 40, or now. Anytime. I'm grateful to have it because it has so much wisdom in it. And Brooke, I thought we could go through some of the topics in the book and give our take on them before talking with Kevin and Mary, because I was happy to see that the book is so in sync with many of the things we've talked about on Right Minded over the last 2 years. For one, it's big on setting goals. In fact, throughout the book, there are 50 or so recommended action items to guide a writer through the writing publishing journey. And many of them are about goal setting. And, you know, I've, of course, talked about this in terms of NaNoWriMo, which is based on setting a big goal of 50,000 words in a month. But not every month is NaNoWriMo. So I'm curious about how people set goals in other months. And as the book notes, there are all different types of goals. For example, if your goal is to enter 5 writing contests in a year, the book recommends that you research the contests, put their deadlines on your calendar, and then work backwards from those deadlines to set different deadlines, miniature deadlines, to prepare your manuscript. And a similar approach might apply to publishing in general or marketing. For example, I know some writers who have the goal of spending 7 minutes a day on Twitter. So Brooke, how do you go about setting goals for your writing and or publishing? Do you do it by setting a date, a daily word count? Do you put it on a calendar? I think it's interesting because you have to figure out with a goal what stretches you while also accounting for all of the unexpected things life can throw at you so that the goal is doable.
Yeah, totally. And before I answer, I just have a quick point of clarification about the people who want to spend more time on Twitter, and that's because they don't feel like they're on there enough.
Yeah, I think there are people who are Twitter phobes or social media phobes, and they're trying to get more comfortable with social media or Twitter in this case so that they can promote their book is one goal, at least.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I laugh because I totally relate to that, but I thought I was like the rare kind of person who aspires to be more on social media because she's a Twitter phobe, but apparently it's common. In our line of work, of course, it's important to be engaged, but I would hesitate to make it one of my goals. My goals around writing at the moment are about keeping on deadline. I have a column for Publishers Weekly. And so that's kind of surprisingly difficult to do because those deadlines come up super fast. When I'm actually working on a book, I do set word count goals and I set accountability structures that are really important to me. But since my last book just came out in September, I'm free of that for the moment. I'm taking a bit of a writing break, which I also think is important. I think it's important to fill the well, depending on the genre that you're writing in, of course. But for someone like me, I do take a year off basically between books so far anyway. Maybe I'll take more off moving forward. So I just right now I'm trying to do what I recommend or what I am recommending to others, which is to journal about the experience of this pandemic. I kind of feel like one day I'll want to look back and revisit what this was like. I know it's going to be and already is a defining crisis in our lives. And whether I write about that in some capacity later on in a memoir or some post, or whether I just have those memories down on the page to share with James when he gets older, I really want to effort to practice capturing these experiences. And so that's pretty much my singular writing goal at the moment, which kind of feels nice, but well, definitely attainable. And what about you, Grant?
Yeah, I like NaNoWriMo, of course, for its big bursts of getting a draft out. But in non-NaNoWriMo months, I tend to write more slowly and perhaps more methodically or recursively, in the sense that I often go back to what I've written to revise it to get clarity before moving on. I might go back to tweak and smooth a sentence or a paragraph during a writing session or at the beginning of a writing session in order to warm up. So I'm a writer who goes back and forth a lot. I'm moving forward in a draft, but I'm not necessarily moving forward directly. And which is why I like to track the amount of time that I write. I believe in constancy in writing almost every day, although I like to take breaks, like you mentioned as well, sometimes. But I track streaks, which are highly motivating, how many days in a row I write. And then I try to write for 90 minutes a day most of the time, or it turns out to be about 45 hours a month. And I still like the monthly goal, though, because there's something magical about a month. I feel like a week's goal is too short for me and a year's goal is too long. And I might make a bigger goal of something like finish revision of novel in 3 months, but I usually figure that I'll need, you know, a certain 90 minutes per day to finish it. So I'll figure that larger goal out based on the 90 minute unit. For other goals, I set submission goals. I should do that more often, I think, because I'm a bad submitter. A good goal for me might just be to submit a story to 10 magazines each month, or 5, you know, whatever it is, but just to have it be more of a regular thing. I think my favorite chapter of this book is about craft, though. Craft is a huge topic, of course, one that might require a whole book or a whole series of books. But I liked how they handled the topic. They listed 100 different craft tips from writers. So you're just reading a list of quotes on different craft areas. And Brooke, I thought we could each choose one tip and say why we liked it.
Yeah, thanks for suggesting that. The one I chose is this amazing quote from Maya Angelou, who was talking at the time about autobiography, but of course it applies to memoir. They're very cousin genres. She said, "I know many think that writing sort of clears the air. It doesn't do that at all. If you're going to write autobiography, don't expect that it will clear anything up. It makes it more clear to you, but it doesn't alleviate anything. You simply know it better. You have names for the people." So I appreciate this because we always talk in our memoir classes that I teach with Linda Joy Myers about the journey of memoir, and that it's mostly comprised of the muddy middle where you're sort of sorting things out and where you're opening all these doors that might have been closed for good reason and going, oh, wow, this is what really happened. And so it doesn't alleviate. It doesn't necessarily clear the air, but it does clarify things. And the more you write, the more clarity you get. And writing begets writing, and that in itself is an important lesson of writing. And I think the tip here inherent in what Maya Angelou is talking about is just keeping at it. It's worth it. It's not that you arrive, however, once you get to the other side. In fact, most memoirists I know arrive at the other side and realize they have another memoir to write. So how about you, Grant? What was the craft part that most inspired you?
Yeah, since I'm forever challenged by plot, I was pleased to see the quote by Lee Child in the book, which is some of the best plot advice I've ever read. Lee Child is the author of the Jack Reacher novel series, and he actually the quote comes from an essay in the New York Times I read several years ago and often reread. Child says, "As novelists, we should ask or imply a question at the beginning of the story, and then we should delay the answer." And I think that this is like the best definition of suspense and plot. And his metaphor, if you read the whole essay, and you can just Google it and read it in the Times, he says that you know, writing suspense is like creating hunger. And he says that the question of how you create suspense is actually the wrong question, because it's similar to the question like how to bake a cake. And the answer isn't in the recipe or how you mix all the ingredients together, he says. But the question itself, the way it's framed, teaches writers to focus on the ingredients of suspense and their combination. He says the right question is, how do you make your family hungry? And the answer is, you make them wait for hours for dinner or for that cake. And as novelists, you know, we should ask or imply a question at the beginning of the story, and then we should just delay the answer. And it's that simple. So suspense has been solved. But of course, it's not that simple. And that brings up another question that the book addresses in a really good way, I think, is whether you can learn to write such a story. And the book goes, you know, into a variety of ways to learn how to write, and whether it's teaching yourself through your own reading program or going to an MFA program or learning through a writing group. And it's a perennial question whether writing can be taught. And I like the way they introduce it with this quote from Kurt Vonnegut. He was asked by an interviewer, "Do you really think creative writing can be taught?" And he said, "About the same way golf can be taught. A pro can point out obvious flaws in your swing." I thought that was a really interesting way to view it. So what do you think, Brooke? Since you're a student and a teacher of writing, can you learn the flaws, only learn the flaws in your swing, or can you learn something more?
Well, I do like the quote from Vonnegut, because it's certainly my experience as a writing coach and an editor that a lot of the job is pointing out what's not working. It's showing the writer tendencies and quirks and habits that they might want to break, but that alone is certainly not enough. It's not enough for a writer to just break their bad habits. They also can, of course, and do grow as writers. And writers I've worked with in classes, in their books, they have profound ahas along the way. They learn how to slow down and how to show details. They may have a moment where they understand characterization for the first time, which is then a game changer, right? I see writers who are not writing in scene, or who really don't even know what a scene is, and then suddenly they grasp the concept, and that too changes everything. So I think it's less about being taught and more about the fact that, yes, writers can be encouraged. I think adults who come to writing already know how to write, but they sometimes don't know how to write fiction or how to write memoir or how to write poetry. So they need a class or a coach or an editor to guide them. And I feel like the majority of my breakthrough writers are not writers who suddenly learn the craft, but they are those who suddenly get it. So it's more like a click moment. And then from there, everything shifts. What do you think, Grant? Does the quote resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. I think in similar ways that it does with you, because I don't like its premise necessarily. I've heard the same question asked of teachers. Can you learn to be a good teacher, or is it something innate? Are you born a good writer? In other words, you know, is there something about being a good writer that's simply a luck of the draw, you know, that you were bestowed writing talent at birth, which I don't believe. You know, sometimes a person is blessed with a gift that is mysterious and seems God-given, but I think you can learn to be a good writer. You might not learn overnight in one class, and you might not even learn in a whole MFA program, but those things are just ingredients in the ongoing journey. And just as all of the books you read are ingredients, just as the writing that you do in your journal every day is part of the overall ingredient. Nearly every writer I've talked to or read says you have to write hundreds or even thousands of pages before you become a good writer. So it's about the practice and the mindset. And it's about what happens in the classroom of a school, or the classroom of life. You certainly don't have to take writing classes to learn how to write, but they can also help. You know, and maybe you don't publish your novel before you're 30, but that doesn't mean you won't publish it before you're 40 or 50. So I recommend that people trash that question and just trust in their ability to learn and in their ability for determination and persistence, because many a talented writer hasn't been determined enough to write a whole book. So trust in your talent for determination.
Well, Grant, per usual, we're on the same page. So thank you for that. And now let's dive into this very urgent topic at hand, which is how we can all be writers. And I'm taking this idea of being a writer kind of like a meditation. You are a writer. I am a writer. Let's be writers together. And we will do that together while we listen to a couple of masters of the art. So hang tight with us for a quick break. And we thank you for sitting through that in a very zen-like way until we get back. So, Grant, if you can believe it, it's been 2 years since we talked about the idea of doing a podcast together. And I often think about how little we knew at the time and how lucky we were to have others help us put this all together.
Yeah, it's true, Brooke. If it weren't for our wonderful producer, Jeremy, we would have had to do about 1,000 web searches, I think, and maybe, you know, looked for courses to take. And, you know, who knows where we would have taken those courses. And I think if we would have done that, I would have always been wondering, are we doing things right?
Totally. And our sponsor, Startapod, didn't exist back then, but fortunately exists now. So I'm going to recommend it instead of the 1,000 web searches and all the anxiety that inevitably comes along with that.
Yeah, doing a podcast is way more time consuming and involved than I thought. So Startapod would have been a lifesaver if it had been around then with all they offer. And thank God they're around now. So just to list a few of their tools, you can find in-depth video courses, discounted hosting, easy to purchase gear, and an exclusive pathway with access to potential ad revenue.
Totally amazing. It's an all-in-one resource for starting a podcast from the ground up. And there are really good folks over there at Startapod who want you to succeed. So if it's not working out for you, you can cancel at any time.
Yeah. Startapod has everything you need for a podcast except listeners, and they will help you get them as well.
And right now, our listeners who sign up for Startapod will get 50% off of your monthly or annual subscription for the first year. But Grant, they need that URL. So will you do the honors?
I happen to have the URL. I'm looking at it. It's on a piece of paper in my hand. Startapod.com/right-minded. That's right-minded without a hyphen, one word. And Brooke, can I hand it back to you to say it one more time and just recap things?
Yeah, let me break it down. Sign up today, 50% off, startapod.com/right-minded.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm excited to talk to today's guest because I've been reading Poets and Writers magazine since I decided to become a writer long ago. And I've also been greatly honored to write a few articles for Poets and Writers in the last few years. Its two most recent editors, Kevin Larimer and Mary Gannon, have written a great book that marshals their years of wisdom and the wisdom published in Poets and Writers. And the book's called The Poets and Writers Complete Guide to Being a Writer. And it really is a complete guide. Kevin is the current editor-in-chief of Poets and Writers, where he edits Poets and Writers magazine, oversees the website, and directs the organization's program of events, Poets and Writers Live. He received his MFA from the Iowa Writers Workshop, where he served as the poetry editor of the Iowa Review. Mary Gannon is the executive director of the Community of Literary Magazines and Presses. And from 2013 to 2018, she was associate director and director of content for the Academy of American Poets. From 2010 to 2013, she was the editorial director of Poets and Writers, where she oversaw the production of PW.org and the publication of Poets and Writers magazine, for which she served as editor from 2004 to 2009. And Mary received her MFA in poetry from Arizona State University, where she was awarded a Swarthout Writing Prize in Poetry. Thanks so much for joining us, Kevin and Mary.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, it's a treat for us. And Kevin, I wanted to start out with a question for you. First, I want to say again, you named this book right. It is a very complete guide that addresses every aspect of writing and publishing, from when to pick up the pen or put it down, to tips on how to find and enter writing contests, applying for and, you know, taking writing retreats, or navigating the seas of self-publishing and publishing, and a number of other aspects of building a sustainable career. And I like that you start out the book, though, by defining what it means to be a writer or a real writer. And I was wondering if you can tell us a bit more about what you think defines a writer.
Well, I think what it means to be a writer, you know, is different for every writer. For some people, it is a matter of self-expression. For other people, it's a matter of getting a message out there. You know, so, you know, we took great pains in the book to not try to define too carefully what it means to be a writer, because it's, you know, the answer is different for everybody. But I think that the more important thing is to embrace being a writer, because as we say in the book, you know, there is no higher art form, and it's a hell of a great thing to be. And, you know, we also go to great lengths in the book to talk all about the different options for writers out there to achieve what you want to achieve. And that's kind of where we start too, is to try to define for yourself what you want out of your writing. Because once you define that for yourself, then you're better able to explore the options that will get you what you want out of it.
Yeah, we certainly agree with that sentiment. And Mary, I'm taken by your suggestion to writers to write a fan letter to an author. One of the many benefits of our social media age is that we can have direct access to authors in a way no other generation ever has. And it's a great way to connect with your heroes. But you recommend that writers don't just follow an author, but reach out with a letter. Why do you recommend that?
Well, I think that doing that, taking the time to actually sit down and think about exactly what you appreciate in a particular writer's work. One purpose is, of course, you know, all writers love to receive fan letters. And so in that regard, you're just, you know, sharing the love and expressing your appreciation for another writer's work, which I think is just part of being a good literary citizen. Writing can be sort of I think sometimes writers can feel a little bit isolated. And we've heard over the years from so many writers who are so appreciative when they hear from their readers about what their readers, you know, how their readers were transformed by their work, what they took away, what their perceptions were. And, you know, it's really, really meaningful for a writer to get feedback on their work and to connect with their readers in that sort of personal way. So there's that. But the other thing is having the opportunity to really clarify your thinking about why it is that one writer's work strikes you, why you find it powerful, what qualities that it has that really resonate with you. That exercise can also be important and feed your own your understanding of your own work, your understanding of your own goals as a writer, perhaps, and the things that you value in the art form. So in that way, it can also feed your own practice.
I want to pivot here to Kevin and just say I really appreciated the part of the book where you discuss rigorous writing schedules, because there's a lot of advice out there to write every day. And people who can't write every day often feel insufficient, that they don't want it enough somehow. Can you talk more about this, how your commitment to writing isn't measured by the number of hours you write, and how the writing life is bigger than that?
Sure, I'd love to. You know, this is something I think that every writer has heard, and you know, it can be inspiring to read about or hear other writers talk about their writing schedule or their sort of perfect writing cave where they get all of this work done, and they're always there at a certain time and they can write every day, and that can be really inspiring. But I think that too often writers feel like if they don't have that, they're not doing it right. And I think that really loses sight of the fact that we're all coming at this work from different perspectives. We're all coming at it with our own realities. And, you know, there are questions of access and privilege and all sorts of other things that can influence one's time that they have to write. So, you know, everybody has to kind of carve out their own time. And, you know, it's true. One of the things that we make a point in the book of saying is that we call it the writing life for a reason. And the writing life is not just writing. You know, the writing life entails all of these other things. And some of it is being there for other writers, you know, just to sort of bring it back to the community. Being a part of a writing community, a lot of it is about, you know, learning from other writers about how to write, or being part of a community to learn about publishing opportunities and things like that. But it's also about having a team of writers or other people who you can talk to about all of the other things that are a part of the writing life, the emotions that go into it, the sort of the work that's not about the writing. So it's submissions and, you know, how the business works and that kind of thing. So in a lot of ways, that's really what we wanted this book to be, is a way for people to feel like they had a community sort of in the pages of this book, and to hear from a lot of different voices about what we hope is a lot of the things that they're confronting in their writing life.
Yeah. And I really like the section in the book about giving writers permission to be, you know, something that sometimes I think they don't have permission to be is to be proud. And I liked it as a Midwesterner like you, who, at least in my family culture and my town culture, whatever, humility was the gold standard. And it was a humility that I think could sometimes lead one to actually downplaying accomplishments, if not just kind of a self-sabotage of your accomplishments, both to yourself and the world. So pride isn't a bad word, and writers even need to brag a bit from time to time, as you say. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more, because bragging is generally thought of as a bad character trait.
Right. Yeah, I think that partly with in this age of social media, we've kind of gotten beyond that. But still, you know, I know that I hesitate to say something, you know, about one of my accomplishments or whatever. I mean, even in promoting this book, it's something that I think about. Like, I don't know if it's bragging really, but it's promoting yourself. And, you know, we hear about that's a part of the writer's job now, is to add to the promotional efforts for one's work. And I don't think it's a bad thing. And I think that we should all be talking about the wonderful writing that we're doing. And, you know, I think pride is not a bad word when it comes to writing at all.
Yeah, thanks for that. Agreed. And you've both worked with so many writers over the years as editors and through your readers. So we're going to end by asking each of you to take this question, and we'll start with Mary and then hear from Kevin. Do you have a favorite tip or one thing that you tell writers when asked for advice at conferences or wherever you might speak? And it looks like we have two questions, actually. So here's the first one. It's, do you have a favorite tip? One. And second, is there one piece of advice that you'd tell yourself as a young writer? So, Mary?
There's lots of tips, depending on what it is that people are asking about, that we give in the book and that we've given in person. You know, a lot of people will ask about how to get published, things like that. So, you know, there's kind of practical advice that I would give just about not letting the world and editors, literary magazine editors, agents, not letting rejection stand in your way. So to be resilient, I think, is one piece of advice or one tip that I frequently give writers, because, you know, sometimes, especially emerging writers, will get really frustrated if they don't place their work right away in a literary magazine once they've just first started to submit their work, for example, or they can't land an agent, or they can't. And, you know, Poets and Writers has covered over the years so many stories like this. You know, those people in those roles, who are sometimes referred to as gatekeepers, they're just people with subjective opinions. And they also are held to a whole set of conditions that writers don't necessarily know about. I mean, if you're a literary magazine editor and you only have two slots open for a poem, you know, for example, in the next issue, that's going to inform whether or not you reject somebody's work, even if you loved it, you know. And a lot of times writers will take rejection so to heart. So I think the tip I would give along those lines is just to be really resilient and to believe in your work and to find trusted readers to help you along the way as you, you know, pursue this lifelong pursuit of writing and publishing.
How about you, Kevin?
I certainly agree with that. And I would say, you know, when I am at conferences or retreats or things like that, and people come up and ask me questions about should I do this or should I do that, I do find myself talking with those people about, you know, what they want out of it. And this goes back to something I mentioned earlier, and it really is sort of a guiding principle in the book, which is just to really, you know, take the time and do the work to try to understand what you want, because what you want is not necessarily what A, B, or C successful writer wanted, you know? So it's about, you know, figuring out what you want, figuring out what your expectations are, and then, you know, making decisions based on that. And, you know, being able to make decisions, you know, it's going to help if you do the research and try to understand how these different things work, like how the writing contests work, or how literary agents work, or how self-publishing works, all of these different things, which is, you know, really what we tried to get into this book. I would think, or I would say, in terms of what I wished someone had told me early on, that it's okay to say no. I think that, you know, and this speaks to what Mary was talking about, there sometimes is this sort of unconscious kind of rush, like it's a sprint, rather than a marathon, which is what it really is. You know, it's a marathon that's going to last your whole life, but it's okay to say no if what you're being offered doesn't quite feel right. You know, I feel like sometimes writers can find themselves in a situation where it's like, okay, this magazine or this small press or this whatever it is has offered to publish my work. And I think you really need to put in the time to think about whether or not that's exactly what you want, or whether this agent is exactly the person I want to have a relationship with, or this book editor, or whoever it is. And it's okay to say no. Obviously you would say it politely or any of that, but I sort of cringe when I consider or think about writers who may feel pressure to do something a certain way. And I would just caution that's, it's not true. Everybody can sort of find their own path through the writing life. And if anything doesn't feel right, you know, you have the power to say no and find a better situation for you and your work.
Thanks so much. That was great advice, Kevin and Mary. Thanks so much for sharing it.
Thanks, Grant.
Yeah, thank you both.
Thanks, Brooke.
We'll be right back with today's takeaway after a short break.
So, Brooke, could we be more thrilled to have another new sponsor?
No, we in fact could not be more thrilled, because these sponsors are literally the reason we can keep the show going, and because they're amazing services that are super aligned with the stuff that we care about.
That's right. So Q Book Pipeline, which searches for and develops emerging talented authors to connect with agents and publishers.
Yeah, and this is so great, because what we're sharing with all of you today is their unpublished contest, and the entry deadline is June 1st. So Grant, could you tell our listeners a little bit about what Book Pipeline is looking for?
Yeah, basically unpublished manuscripts, and the contest is open to multiple genres of fiction and nonfiction, including lit and experimental. The contest is reviewed by industry players like Catherine Teagan Books and Verve Publishing, and several top agencies, publishers, and small presses. And the prize is pretty great, Brooke.
Yeah, I see that. $15,000. Not too shabby. And all finalists receive additional one-on-one development with pipeline execs, promotion, and long-term assistance in finding representation, which is a really unique service and an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. So we encourage you to check out Book Pipeline. It launched in 2014 as an offshoot of Script Pipeline, which has helped launch the careers of screenwriters for more than 20 years.
So in other words, they're legit.
Very much so. Check out bookpipeline.com. That's bookpipeline.com. And one more time, bookpipeline.com. Welcome back, everyone. This week's takeaway comes directly from the Poets and Writers book. And one of the things I love about the book is how it has little action items of all different types sprinkled throughout the book in each chapter. And this one relates to what we just talked about with Kevin and Mary about occasionally taking a moment to be proud of yourself as a writer, and to even, you know, brag and list your the things you've been successful at as a writer. But at the same time, you know, writing, we have this complicated relationship to what success is as a writer. And sometimes I think we lose sight of what success means and why we got into writing in the first place. And so I think this is good to do at numerous points in your writing life, to sit down and take 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and just jot down your thoughts on what is your definition of success. You know, is it about book sales or the size of your advance? Or is there another way to think about success in terms of your self-expression and the way that writing is giving meaning to you or the community that you're involved with? There's so many different ways to define success. So sit down, reflect on what success means to you, write it down. That'll help you absorb it even more deeply. weekly.
Thanks for that, Grant. And everybody, it's been a little while since we read a review. And so I want to say this one from Spontaneous Orange Peel, just because I really wanted to say Spontaneous Orange Peel. And she or he writes, "Thanks, Brooke and Grant, for this amazing boost to my week. I am a writer, a marketing writer by day, but it's been years since I've written anything that I've wanted to write. At the start of 2020, I decided to begin writing my novel, and this podcast has given me the courage and inspiration to keep going. Thank you, thank you." And so we are doing this podcast for people like Spontaneous Orange Peel, I just want to say. And I want to remind everybody that at the beginning of the year, when we were talking about our goals, we actually set the goal of getting, I think we said 500 reviews, and we're totally not there. So help us. If we could get 500 reviews by the end of the year, then we will have something to brag about, and we will put that on the list of our own things to be proud of. So help us out. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week with another fantastic guest.